Among the things to celebrate on Thanksgiving, family, tradition, gratitude, this day also marks the beginning of American cuisine. And if you believe the jokes about British food, the Pilgrims did us a great favor in getting such an early start. English food has long been an international joke, a sorry traveler's tale of toad-in-the-hole overcooked vegetables and boiled meat. If you believe author Douglas Adams, even the Brits don't like it much. He once wrote, quote, "It is by eating sandwiches in pubs at Saturday lunchtime that the British seek to atone for whatever their national sins have been." With a reputation like that, a history of British food subtitled An Extraordinary Thousand Years of History might sound a little bold. If you'd like to challenge or sustain the stereotype of English cuisine, give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And joining us now from his home in Sussex, England, is food writer Colin Spencer, the author of British Food, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Yes, hello.
You subtitled your book An Extraordinary Thousand Years of History. British food, extraordinary? Are we exaggerating here?
Well, no, because we had a great gastronomic past, and I wanted to draw the public's attention to that. Right from early in the Middle Ages, when the Crusaders brought back all sorts of ingredients from the Mediterranean and from Arabia, all those things which Elizabeth David used to want us to eat in the 50s, we were eating in 1100.
Things such as?
Well, there's a ravioli recipe that I discovered, which is dated around 1100, which you could cook now, which is no different, which is full of cheese and sprinkled with pine nuts and sprinkled with all the herbs like basil, which one wants now. I mean, it's just extraordinary, the similarity to the food we eat today.
So how and when did things turn for the worse in terms of British cooking?
Well, it happened in the 19th century, when in fact the snobbish thing was always to eat French food. And when food was titled in French terms, and British food was then disregarded. So nobody cooked it except the lower middle classes and the peasant classes. The upper classes and the middle class loved French food. And so when something is disdained as much as that, then it is ignored and people just overcooked it. That's when the rot started.
So the elite was eating coq au vin and the middle class invented mushy peas.
We always had mushy peas, which I think is delicious, because they were a very cheap form of carbohydrate. I mean, in the Middle Ages, the peasants ate what we now call mushy peas because it was one thing that kept through the winter, dried peas, which were then soaked and then cooked over a long time.
Well, speaking of the Victorian age, a British woman named Isabella Beaton is closely associated with the concept of Victorian cooking. Tell us a little bit about her.
Well, she was an incredible woman, really, because she died very young, in her 20s. But in the few years she lived, she worked very hard in the sense that she compiled for her husband this huge book, which the readers of the magazine that the husband produced wrote in their favorite recipes. And so, in fact, what's fascinating about Mrs. Beaton's book is it reflects the whole of Victorian society in the 1850s. It's very authentic. We get a very vivid picture. And, of course, one of the things that she has a whole chapter on is leftovers, the kind of food, because one of the elements to the decline in British cooking was urbanization, moving into great big towns, cutting ourselves off from the rural roots. So all those leftovers that you chucked out of the kitchen door for the hens and the pigs, you now, in fact, kept and made another meal of.
One famous example would be Bubble and Squeak.
Bubble and Squeak, shepherd's pie, quite good dishes in a way, I think. Both are lovely, but if you go on cooking leftovers for too many days, they get quite disgusting.
I was also surprised when I lived in England to realize that these were, in effect, leftovers and go into a grocery store and buy frozen leftovers.
Yes. Well, I'm not sure you'd find those today.
Let's get a listener on the line. Our number is 800-989-8255. And let's go to Larry, who's with us from San Francisco.
Good day.
Hello.
Hello, Larry. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. I wanted to say my wife, who is a chef, and I, who have several restaurants in San Francisco, have discovered that the England is some of the best food we've eaten anywhere in the world. And I think it's because of their commitment to local farmers who practice good organic farming, bringing back some heirloom vegetables and heirloom animals. And good, simple British food should be a model for us all.
Really?
Great. Well, thank you for saying that, because there has been a huge revolution in the last 20 years, and the food here is getting better and better, and farmers' markets are becoming hugely popular. I mean, I get all our produce every week from the farmers' market.
I just hope that the people of England realize the threat posed by genetically engineered foods and the work that the government of the United States, in collaboration with Monsanto and other big companies, are doing to try to introduce genetically engineered crops into England, which can be a tremendous threat to local and organic food.
Well, yes, I agree. They can be. The point is that, especially on a small island, genetically engineered crops can, in fact, move so quickly onto other fields and organic fields of crops. I mean, we're very concerned and very worried about it.
Larry, thanks very much for the call. And what are you making for Thanksgiving dinner today, by the way?
Thanks for taking my call. My role today is mashed potatoes, which contain equal amounts of potato and butter.
Excellent.
And of course, organic butter and organic potatoes from a farmer who lives just down the road from us.
Well, thanks very much for that, and I'm sure it'll be heart-stoppingly good.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Helen, who's with us from St. Louis, Missouri. Helen, you're on the air.
Helen speaking.
Yes.
I wanted to really remonstrate with the Americans' opinion of British food. I grew up in Cheshire. My dad went to sea, and I was born in the war years, and my mom could make the best damn food that you can imagine.
Yes.
Everybody imagines that it was all stews and hot pots and things like that, but she could take a breast of veal, bone it, stuff it, roast it with potatoes and parsley and rosemary to die for. Unbelievably good food. Yorkshire pudding and roast beef. How could you get better than that?
Well, quite. I agree.
I mean, it's light and fluffy. And in Yorkshire, you know, they served that first so that you didn't eat so much of what costs more.
Yes.
Yes. And wonderful green vegetables right out of our garden. I can't imagine where people ate. It wasn't at our house.
That sounds wonderful.
I go home every year, and I am amazed at how wonderful the vegetables and the fruits still taste.
Good.
So fresh and so good.
Yeah.
Really wonderful.
You should always cook Yorkshire pudding underneath the beef if you can.
Absolutely. With the drippings.
That's right.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yes. The best. Yeah, well, thank you for letting me have my say. It's been kind of a thing for me, because I listen to it all the time here, and they really don't know what they're missing.
Helen, thanks very much for the call. Do you celebrate Thanksgiving while you're here,
yes,
by the way?
I do, because I like good food.
Well, so say we all. Thank you very much for the call, Helen.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our guest is Colin Spencer. He's the author of British Food, An Extraordinary Thousand Years of History. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Mandy, and Mandy's with us from Oakland, California.
Yes, hi. I was calling to share a Marmite story, which is my father is from Ilford, Essex, and
yes,
he loves to send me jars and jars of Marmite.
Yes.
And I love to put them on crumpet with lots of butter, and my fiancé, who's from the Midwest, thinks it's one of the most vile, disgusting beef jelly spreads one could possibly put on anything, so I thought I would just share that story.
Well, you have to be a salt lover, you see.
You obviously are. We had a small child when we were living in London, and Marmite has a lot of things that are extremely good for you in there. A lot of B-complex vitamins, and we thought we could pass this off to her untrained palate, and gave her her first taste, and she said, "Oh, Mommy, I think I've just eaten something bad."
Well, I think that my father would agree that it's good, and my fiancé still maintains that Marmite is an enigma. So, but I will continue to put it on my crumpets or bagels or whatever else I cook with.
Great.
Happy Thanksgiving, Mandy.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Sarah. And Sarah's with us on the line from Florence, Italy.
Yes. Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. I'm reminiscing. I was traveling around Europe in the 60s on Europe on $5 a day. And I had some on this kind of a budget. I had some of the worst meals I ever ate in Paris and some of the best meals I ever ate in London.
Really? Yes.
So,
how fascinating.
That would have been before the time that you're describing as the revival in the last 20 years.
Quite. It is, but there you are. But my view is that French food has declined a lot in the last 20 years. But obviously in the 60s, too, it wasn't hot, so hot.
No, it wasn't. It definitely wasn't. Then I had a plus because my mother came over and met me in London, and she took me to Simpson's, which I don't know if that's still around.
It still exists, yes.
It's still thriving. And then I had my, you know, the non plus ultra of their roast beef and Yorkshire pudding,
right,
which I can still taste.
Simpson's for roast beef and Yorkshire pudding,
Simpson's,
I guess, is
in
a
the
tradition.
Strand.
Yes, indeed. Sarah, do you celebrate Thanksgiving there in Florence?
We will, but on Sunday, because this is a holiday here, and if I gave people that much food to eat in the evening, I'd be afraid of causing heart attacks among my friends. So we have them over on Sunday.
Well, I hope you have a wonderful celebration.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Rhiannon in Portland, Oregon. Am I pronouncing that right?
Rhiannon,
excuse me.
No problem.
You're on the air.
I just wanted to say that I think deep-fried Mars bars are a much unknown Scottish specialty that are phenomenal.
Scottish. Yes.
I actually had them for the first time in Australia, and they announced them as American-style fried Mars bars, but who knows?
So that's is that before or after the haggis?
That, I think, is after.
They dip them in batter first and then deep-fry them.
Oh, they're phenomenal.
Really? I know somebody who tasted one once that said it was the most disgusting thing they ever tasted.
Oh, it gets all crisp on the outside and gooey on the inside.
Really?
Oh, I love them. I've had a couple, but it's best if you have a group of people to eat them because they're so rich and gooey.
Yes.
Serving them today there in Portland?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Thanks very much, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Before we let you go, Colin, you were on a panel of British food writers and chefs who chose the 50 best British foods of this year. What was on the list?
All sorts of things. English apples for a start. Patum pepperium, do you know about that?
No, I don't.
Which is also called gentleman's relish, which was put together in the middle of the 19th century, which is an anchovy paste, and very delicious it is. Earl Grey tea, unpasteurized farmhouse butter, all sorts of things like damson cheese, Gloucester pork pies, and then quite a lot of kind of Indian food, because you see, we must remember that from the 17th century, Anglo-Indian food came into Britain, and all the recipe books there are full of curries and chutneys. So one of the foods chosen in the 50 best British foods was chili jam. And another was tikka masala, with chicken tikka masala, which is, in fact, one of the most popular dish that people order when they eat out.
Well, thank you very much for that, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you, and a happy Thanksgiving to you all.
Thank you so much. Colin Spencer is the author of British Food, An Extraordinary Thousand Years of History. He spoke to us from his home in Sussex, England. Ira will be here tomorrow with Science Friday. We'll be back on Monday. Have a great holiday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.